Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Panel, Current Market for Hospital Outreach Transactions, Sales and Management Service Arrangements. The presenters are Melissa Butterworth, President and CEO, Advanced Strategic Partners, Hollywood, Florida, Crystal Contini, JD, Practice Chair, McDonald Hopkins, Cleveland, Ohio, Noel Maring, Executive Director, Health Systems, LabCorp, Washougal, Washington, and Jeff Myers, CPA, Vice President, Consulting and Strategic Advisory Services, Akumin, Scottsdale, Arizona.
All right, so you guys are all stuck with me again for the third installment of our M&A panel series. As Liz mentioned, our topic is more focused on hospitals. So it's current market for hospital outreach transactions, sales and management service arrangements. My name is Crystal Contini. I chair the M&A group at McDonald Hopkins, another lawyer in the world, and I've had the pleasure with working with many of the people on this panel. So we are looking forward to an exciting discussion on hospital transactions. So my esteemed panelists today, I'm going to go to my left, Melissa Butterworth, President and Managing Member of Advanced Strategic Partners. We have Noel Maring, Executive Director of Health Systems at LabCorp, and Jeff Myers, Vice President and General Manager of Laboratory Consulting and Advisory Services with Acumen. So similar to my first panel, I am going to ask Melissa to give the flyover of what she is seeing in the market, a little sense of what's happening with laboratory sales, and with a little bit of a slant toward hospital transactions.
Thank you, Crystal, and good afternoon, everybody. My name is Melissa Butterworth, and no relation to the Mrs. Butterworth syrup, even though I've been asked that for many, many years. I am the Managing Director of Advanced Strategic Partners, and for those of you who are not familiar with us, we are a M&A advisory firm specific to the laboratory industry, and our whole claim to fame over the last 20 years is that we are true insiders on your side. Everybody that's affiliated with our organization grew up in the laboratory industry, and that's one of the key things that differentiates our team. Worked with Crystal Contini and the folks at McDonald Hopkins for many, many years on a number of transactions. And I have to say that this is a really wild time for our space. I don't think I've ever quite seen some of the things that we have experienced over the last several years. And I'm going to hit on a few of those points as I talk about what we are seeing big picture. And I'm going to drill it down for you and get a little bit more specific. As Chris Janiel said earlier, over the last 5 years, there have been about a little bit over $5.6 billion of transaction work in the laboratory space. With LabCorp having acquired the majority of those, our numbers are very similar to Chris's, being that we have seen that LabCorp has acquired about 65% of the market, whereas in Quest has acquired about 25%. So clearly, LabCorp is much more aggressive in the space. And Sonic has been a lot less aggressive, as many of us probably in this room know. They've had about 10% of the market share. Going into, if you look at the number, the $5.7 billion, the majority of that has been spent over the last 2 years, with about $2.6 billion of transaction work over the course of 2022 and 2023. Now, if you take a look big picture at really the last decade, and you take a look at 2014 through 2018, there were about 133 total transactions in our space, whereas in the last 5 years, that number was down about 13%, or more specifically, about 116 transactions. Now, coming in, you know, if you look at 2014 through 2018, The number one type of laboratory that was sold was anatomical pathology. There were about 33 transactions. And then coming in second place was molecular laboratories. And then in third place, it was other laboratories. And when we talk about other laboratories, we talk about toxicology laboratories, genetics, CRO type of laboratories. And then in fourth place was clinical laboratories, and then fifth was hospital transactions. And I'm bringing this up for a reason, because we've seen a tremendous shift as we looked at the last 5 years in comparison to looking at that 2014 through 2018. So even though there were a 13 to 14% less transactions over the last 5 years compared to the prior 5 years, the transactions are much larger in nature. And we've seen a shift. We've seen a shift whereby prior anatomical pathology was the leader. And what we're seeing now is we're seeing that hospitals have risen up significantly, and they've taken from last position to about third position. And I want to talk about some of the larger hospital transactions in a minute. So over the last 5 years, once again, there were 116 transactions. The number one, the type of laboratory that took the number one position was molecular transactions. And that's really no surprise, being that we went through the whole COVID experience that we did over the last several years. Number two position was anatomical pathology. We've seen a number of new players in the space, and we're super excited about that. We've recently closed on a fairly large AP transaction with Versant. Super excited about working with Jim and Rob and their team at Versant, as they are actively acquiring in the AP space. We also saw Path Group, who has acquired a number of AP labs over the last several years. And there are a number of other new AP players in the space, such as CorePath, GoPath. So we're seeing more and more anatomical pathology folks emerging in the marketplace. To talk a little bit about more specifically some of the hospital transactions, I think it's safe to say that probably the leader was announced in October of 2022. It's a company that's near and dear to my heart. I actually started my career off in the hospital space, running an outreach program for Ascension Health in Jacksonville, Florida. And the Ascension Health deal that was announced in October of 2022 with LabCorp was somewhat of what I want to call the pendulum when it really dropped, right? Shortly thereafter, we saw Quest Diagnostics purchase New York Presbyterian. And then shortly after that, we saw the acquisition of Quest Diagnostics with Northern Light in Maine. And then in May of 2023, we saw the announcement of LabCorp and Jefferson Health, and then followed by the announcement of Providence in May of 2023. And then we saw Legacy Health System announced in July of 2023. And then we saw, right after that, the Tufts Medicine acquisition. So we've seen a lot of movement in the hospital space. And as we moved into 2024, there have been a number of seven transactions that were announced, with three of them being clinical, two of them being molecular, and then two of them being hospital transactions. So if the first 4 months of 2024 are indicative of what we continue to expect for the remainder of the year, we should likely end 2024 with between 21 and 24 transactions, which is similar to what we saw last year. We saw about an average of 22 transactions. And knowing what our firm knows about the current pipeline and knowing what we're seeing in the market, we expect the continuation of hospital deals to continue growing fairly substantially. So I guess to summarize it, Crystal, for you, you know, even though transaction work is down about 13%, we are seeing much greater deals in the works. So they're much larger deals. We're seeing a lot of them be very complicated health systems. We're seeing health systems taking a look at the total enterprise value, looking at whether or not they should sell their outreach assets, whether or not they should consider outsourcing some of their larger labs with lab management deals, and we expect that trend to continue.
So thank you for that background. So Noel, since LabCorp seems to be getting a lot of press and doing a lot of these deals, why are health systems more motivated to sell their outreach business today, and or enter into a management arrangement with a company like LabCorp or one of the other big providers?
Yeah, let me speak to that. And I think it may speak and add to what Melissa was just saying on the activity. I think you can look at it from a broad perspective first, that a lot of the activity where you saw a lot of the AP businesses and some specialty area and molecular is a lot of industry consolidation, which has been typical for the entire time I've been in the industry. It's continued to consolidate. I think from a health system standpoint, the reason is a little bit different. First of all, if you look at the uptick, it really for hospital transactions, really occurred right after the pandemic. Some of that was due, obviously, to we all know the financial conditions. Many of the health systems were post-pandemic, and a lab asset on the outreach side is a very saleable asset. It's not a core business for most health systems, the outreach side of it. And so it's easily something that could have been sold that has significant value. And so that's part of it. But I do think, and I really want to emphasize this, I think the broader reason is really a change in perspective for health systems, and the business of what do they want to be in. With margins being compressed as it has been, I think they're trying to make some rational choices and some strategic choices as to what businesses they want to be in, what's core to them, what are the businesses that they might be able to outsource and find a good partner with, and so they're looking in that direction. And then they also have, and I'll talk more about this strategy because I think that is the up-and-coming area that health systems, and it's what's kind of a changing dynamic in how they're choosing partners. We'll talk more about that as we go on, but just from an overview standpoint, the other issue health systems are seeing is, their labor shortages, obviously, in many areas of the lab. So we're seeing that, which was never really on a health system's radar in the past. They're coming up and saying, do we really want to be the one running this? And is there a partner that can help us do that better? And so those labor shortages have had an aspect to it. And then the third I would put to it is, and you can see it where the activity gets very tight, for example, in the Northeast in the last year or two, payer reimbursement for health systems, which we all know for the outreach business has been way above commercial laboratories' reimbursement rates. That's gone down, and I do anticipate that you're going to see payer reimbursements for hospital outreach programs continue to slide. And then the third related, smaller, but it's still there, is more and more risk-based reimbursements, value-based reimbursements. So from a higher-level perspective, I think those are three issues that have really motivated the health systems. And I will say, and I think we'll talk more about this, what the health systems want is also changing from a few years ago.
So, Jeff, do you have anything to add to that? Because I know we talked as part of our prep just some of the different variables that health systems are facing.
Well, I would agree with Melissa and Noel, especially with respect to activity in the marketplace, the financial pressures. The areas where we really try to focus on is making sure health system executives make the right strategic decisions. The cost of a wrong strategic decision can be catastrophic. And one of the most astounding things to me, and if I just give a little bit of my background, I got my start in the CPA profession back when it was Big Six accounting. And there's always that talk about things coming full circle. And that's certainly the case in my career. As I think about what we try to do to make sure that organizations make the right strategic decision, it's very much an evidence-based, almost hybrid audit-type look at an organization. And so one of the biggest challenges organizations have today is understanding what is the value of that strategic asset. You know, to use an analogy and kind of bring it back to each one of us individually, hopefully we all have a retirement plan that's continuing to grow in the marketplace. Obviously, sometimes that's not the case. But when I work with health system executives and we talk about outreach, often the question is, well, what really is outreach? And sometimes it circles back to, well, your employed physician groups. Anything that's happening outside the four walls of the hospital would probably be classified as ambulatory outreach, inreach. But we're not keeping score of what the value of that asset is. And so what we really try to focus on, and we'll talk about this more later, is ensuring that from a valuation perspective, we get an understanding of what is the initial value from an estimate standpoint, a materially accurate estimate, so that you can then move to potential new phases. I'll end this piece with just saying that lab strategy is a long-term commitment. It's multi-phased. You cannot boil the ocean in 1 month. There are many, many steps that take place in making a strategic decision and a strategic affiliation. So really excited about talking today and appreciate everybody in the audience.
So again, going back to the whole fit concept, in order to understand what different groups bring to the table in terms of either a management services arrangement or the sale of outreach, Melissa, what advice would you give to hospitals or even laboratories generally about running, I would call, a standard RFP process or a bid process with someone like yourself? Like, what are the advantages of doing that?
No, that's a great, great question, Crystal. And if I put my hat, if I go back in my career, I've been in the lab industry now for 29 years, and I started my career with Ascension Health, ran one of their hospital outreach programs called Consolidated Laboratory Services, and it was one of the larger outreach programs within Ascension Health. And so I've had that role before, and the typical standard, you know, process was to run the RFP process, right? Well, the market has shifted and it has changed. And with that, it's really important that health systems also look to pivot and change. And if you really truly, if you're in the audience today and you're looking to maximize your value as a health system and then mitigate your back end risk, then it's really important that you take a completely different look and take a completely different process approach. It's one of the reasons, Crystal, that our firm partnered with Jeff's organization, with Acumen, is because I think step number one is it's really important that health systems have an idea from an enterprise perspective what it is that they have, right? And that's really, and a lot of different health systems, especially ones with a number of different outreaches, that's pretty complicated thing to do, is to understand what it is that you currently have. And that's one of the reasons that we partnered with Acumen. They're able to go in, do a complete system-wide assessment of, you know, not only the outreach, but what if they look at selling that outreach? What's going to happen to the inpatient volume? What's going to happen to their cost per test on the inpatient side? You know, what is the value of what they currently have? And I think that's really step number one. And then step number two, if they do decide to sell their outreach and or do lab management, it's really important that you hire very good advisors to run a real, true six-step M&A process. And I cover a lot of the M&A process in my book, The Endgame, which is on Amazon. If anybody here wants a free copy of it, I've got about 50 copies up here. Would love to meet you, love to give you a complimentary copy. But it talks about the details of the six-step M&A process. And the reason that that is so important in today's environment, as opposed to just sending out a generic RFP, is you really need to understand, you know, what's in the pipeline, what, you know, how can you strategically position your organization to make sure that you get optimal value. And in any of these deals that we are doing as M&A advisors, there's
anywhere from 10 to 15 different touch points within each of the buying entities that it's very important to talk to. There's not only the national M&A team of the buying entities, but there's the regional GMs of the buying entities. You know, there's the person that's in charge of the hospital division for the buying entities. And it's really about having advisors that are able to understand all of those moving parts and then also understand how to strategically position, you know, your organization to be able to get maximum value. And you can't do that with a standard RFP process. You may have been able to do that, you know, a decade or even 15 years ago, like when I was running an outreach program. But in today's environment, you can't do that. You need to be able to have experienced advisors to be able to come in, show you exactly what it is that you have, and then help you understand that and then help you understand how to best position that.
Thank you. I think that's a helpful perspective for
you. Mind if I add just a little bit to that?
Yeah, please. No.
Since LabCorp is on the receiving end of the RFP processes, I think the RFP process can be a good way, and it also, from the health system standpoint, allows them to go to their board if they need to go to their board for the transaction to say, look, we've gone through this process. We've given you something we know we're at probably fair market value. So that's the plus side of it. The only thing I would say is that, and I think everybody here would agree on this, is that the RFP process cannot, you don't want to turn it into like a government bidding process where the highest bidder necessarily wins. And the reason the highest bidder could be win, but what you really do want is what people have talked about before, is the appropriate fit in the organization for the health system. And I think it's even more important for health systems today than in the past. Unlike an independent lab that may be sold and the owners may go off into the sunset sooner or later over time, possibly, but that transaction gets separated. Now, because so many physicians are employed by a health system or through their foundations, if you're in states like California, that is an ongoing relationship. And so you really want the best partner on there, because you're going to be working with whoever acquires your outreach program, or if they're managing your inpatient lab, it's even more critical because it's such a critical part of operating an inpatient hospital system. So you want a partner, and one of the things we do at LabCorp, we really stress the governance structures. And the governance structures really, you know, in an ideal world, what does a health system want? They want your money from the outreach business so they can reinvest that in other core areas of the hospital. But they also do not really want to give up control. And that's really understandable in many ways, in that that's their physicians. And they need to be able to, whether it's outreach and particularly on the inpatient side, they need to understand how the lab is going to be run the way they want it run on an ongoing basis. And so we really put governance structures together where there are committees that go in there, and there are really identifiable processes so that we measure them, and measurable processes so that we can measure turnaround time, all of the key KPIs that you need, and have really good discussions with the health system, and so that they understand that whether it's the inpatient lab or even just if it's an outreach transactions. By the way, most transactions now are really moving towards, not all, but it's not just an outreach transaction where you buy the outreach. They want something else in terms of an inpatient side. Could be a full service management agreement. It could be a technical support agreement where we bring in supplies, reagents, things like that, and bring our global purchasing power to the table to help reduce that cost of care for the on the inpatient side. So all of those things become much more of a, you need a partner that's going to be with you on the long term.
Just to add to what both Noel and Melissa mentioned, just emphasizing that fit aspect and the mutual collaboration. It's easy to have a misconception that we have sold our outreach, and let's say it's to LabCorp, and so therefore that's their deal now, and maybe we have a management services agreement, and they're doing everything on a day-to-day basis. As an executive, Crystal, if you're the chief operating officer, that's still your business. And it's essential that there's that mutual collaboration, respect, the win-win mantra, where we're both working moving in the same direction for improvement to healthcare for our physicians, our patients, as well as our own workforce and our own work team. So that fit, there's probably not anything more important than that, even if that means a little bit less from a cash value if you decide to enter into a strategic partnership.
So one of the questions that I got, and I think kind of dovetails with what you're talking about, relates to the roles, I would say, of the three of you in defining what it means for a buyer to manage an outreach lab for a company when the CEOs or the governance or management team isn't as familiar with the laboratory itself, because usually for these large hospital systems, you may not be talking to the person on the ground that's running the lab. You might be talking to a larger executive team. How do you help communicate and get the information so that you can actually show the value that LabCorp brings or that they'll actually realize?
Yeah, I think your point is really good. Most of the executives I've worked with over many years in the hospital, lab is only 3% of a hospital spend. In all honesty, I've very only occasionally seen an executive rise to the senior level within a health system that comes from the lab. They usually come from other very big lines of business within the health system, so they don't have a knowledge of the lab. And one of the things they do need, I do agree, a good advisor is helpful on that. But you also need to be able to, they need to be able to have a partner they can trust that does know the lab and knows it very well. And I would say if you go back 15 years or more, you know, the major laboratories really knew the outreach business, but the inpatient side of the business was like two ships passing in the night.
You know,
they didn't want it. They didn't. When they did it, it was frankly, the health systems that wanted to get a lab management deal usually were someone with either short-term labor or financial issues, and the lab management was 5, 7, sometimes 10 years, and sometimes it frequently converted back to the health system because they wanted that control over it. And I think what we're seeing now is a move towards, first of all, and you can see based on what you've just talked about, the type of health systems, Tufts, Jefferson, Ascension, they're making more strategic decisions, and they are long-term. And then because of that, it's really important to have a partner that does have deep technical knowledge of the inpatient lab operations. And the national labs, the Quest and LabCorp in particular, have made major investments in that. I know because I know the most about LabCorp. We've made significant investments in people, in processes, and in software to help us manage labs, and so that we can measure between lab operations that are similar. I used to love talking to lab managers, and I don't know if I insult you, you can hit me, kick me, but you know, my lab is different from my other 300 bed hospital down the road. You know, some things are different, and depending on what the hospitals, you know, what services the hospitals buy, there may be different service needs, but the basics, you know, between a 300-bed hospital and a 300-bed hospital are pretty good. And so you can measure. And the database that LabCorp has developed, we now actually manage more hospital labs than any hospital system in the country. And that ability to manage that and bring that data and manage efficiently does really help within that.
Jeff, how does Acumen participate in that process to help executives understand what that value is if it just might not be obvious to the rest of the hospital system?
Yeah, and kind of going back to Noel's point about trust, and we think about that executive team, the number of things that an executive has on their plate at any given time, hundreds of critical areas, and the reality, I think we would all agree with this statement, lab is complicated. You really have to get into the weeds, roll up your sleeves, get into the details. And so being able to really bring that back to a 50,000-foot view to try to assist executives in understanding what potential value is, both economic and operational value. One of the biggest challenges with health systems is everything is simply commingled. If you look at the results for a health system, there was one I was looking at today, $7 billion in revenue, $6.5 billion in expense, a $500 million operating margin. No one's keeping score within the ancillary departments. Everybody knows that imaging has, you know, high revenue yield. But when we start thinking about lab, the first point of entry is understanding what's happening outside those four walls to get a sense of net revenue, so cash coming in the door from that perspective, just to get a first look. And one of the things that we've done, especially over the last 5 years, we've had the question posed to our organization, should we sell and should we outsource? And what I love to say is we're about 50-50 on making that recommendation, because we're very much fact-based from an economic perspective, always making sure there's an understanding of operational impact, going back to trust, relationship, mutual collaboration. But it really comes down to having the ability to get line of sight to understand net revenue, for example. But then also, just as big of a question is, what truly goes away if the outreach program is jettisoned or monetized and sold? Health systems, they're all the same with respect to their cost allocation methodology. And so it's consistent where they over allocate an expense to a hospital outreach program. We all know that lab has the ability to generate incredible economies of scale. It scales very well, especially with respect to fixed investments in labor, equipment, infrastructure. Certainly there's variable costs that are associated with outreach, but trying to get an understanding to extract out of what is a commingled accounting system and patient accounting system what's really attributable to outreach, and then bring it to a 50,000 foot view so they can understand revenue, expense, and then begin to take the steps to make the right strategic decision.
Melissa, do you think your role previously in the laboratory industry as a business person helps you do that, helps you look at that information and present that information to executives?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, thank you for asking that. No question about it. I think a combination of having kind of walked the walk and having been a director over a very large outreach program, and then most recently combining forces with Acumen, which was really the missing link that our firm, you know, we've been an advisory firm that's been very successful for the last 18 years. We've had a little over 80 transactions in the lab space behind us, but we really, you know, to be able to have that feet on the street with that, what Acumen has, and which is the reason that we've combined forces to be able to go in there and, you know, do the type of assessment work that Jeff just mentioned. I mean, that's critical. So absolutely, having kind of walked that walk, and then also with the relationships, just having been in that space for so long, is critical.
Thank you. So we've talked a little bit about from the seller's perspective. Noel, when you're looking at these hospital outreach systems, and you foreshadowed this a little bit, what are buyers looking for and what is driving the value?
So first of all, I think what drives the value, and just on the outreach portion is what you're asking, is, you know, any lab company that's going to take a hospital outreach program, we're going to look at it, and this is where I think we're in other parts of the business, you may have to clean up your finances. We're going to really take it, and we're going to take the volume, the mix of testing, and we're going to look at what it looks like on our platform. Because in most cases, we will move the outreach out of the hospital environment, except for maybe some very quick stat testing and needs like that. So, you know, cleaning up your financial, your books is helpful, but it's not as essential as other aspects. I would go, I think Gary and others brought it up on the last one, compliance is probably the number one thing that we would look at. And if we run across compliance issues, it can kill a deal real quick.
Oh, I can
real quick.
Only imagine.
And unless there's some way that we're not taking past behavior liability forward, which in that case, maybe we can get around it. So they're looking for that, but I think, again, as I said earlier, I think buyers are looking for, they want their cash for the outreach business, but they want a long-term partner now. And that is, very different from even hospital transactions 5, 6, 7 years ago.
So, I think the WOVA app, everyone is really excited about this topic, and, perhaps I'm nicer than some of our audience members because I think they're asking the difficult questions. How important is physician communication and physician change management in a lab transaction? And do you think this is something that's often overlooked? Who wants to take that one?
Yes, I think it's often overlooked. And there's always that point of when is the right time to open communication. I think just like everything else in the lab, it has to be a phased approach. There has to be a trusted group, a trusted physician leader, if we get to the point where there will be those discussions to bring them in and really intentionally stage the level of communications. Because I think, Noel, Melissa, I think you would both agree that if there's a decision to move forward with a strategic partner, you're still looking at a 12 to 16 month process to negotiate, find a partner to align with, begin the project plan to execute on the initiative. So there is the right time and the wrong time. We don't want to create panic from that perspective. I don't think anybody enters into these acquisitions and these deals with the end result being a loss of labor force. I think you would agree, most employees that would be associated with patient access points, phlebotomists, they're typically going to be converted to the strategic partner. If there is a technical outsourcing aspect, a management services agreement, the employees, they're going to be considered and taken care of from that perspective. So you want to make sure that we don't communicate too soon, but certainly I think communication today, tomorrow, and in the future has to take place throughout the process.
We actually, and again, I agree with Jeff, that it is the time of the physician communication, depending on where they are within the health system's administrative structure, will depend. But before the transition, let's talk about an outreach program first and then maybe in the inpatient side. As part of the governance structure we put together, we want subcommittees both specifically on outreach. We want physician leaders on that subcommittee, as well as administrative operational leaders on those subcommittees and be part of it. And they are not just something you do a few weeks before the deal goes live. They're on an ongoing basis. And the frequency of meetings can be dependent on the needs at that time. In the beginning, you usually have pretty frequent meetings. So we do that both from an outreach side, and we also do that on an inpatient side. And it's very important to us that physician leadership be participating and active on those deals.
So I forget who said it at the very beginning, but that laboratory and outreach deals are complex. Jeff, I think it might have been you. So speaking of complexity, let's say we all find our best buyer. Melissa finds a great partner. Let's even say it's LabCorp, and they come in and everyone gets to a strategic transaction that is complete. Can you maybe talk a little bit about the transition side and what that looks like and what sellers should be thinking about with respect to the post-closing transition?
Yes, I think there is a misconception that you get to the finish line, we've done a deal, the check is in the bank, and now we're done. The transition is, again, it follows that phase of a long-term approach. Technology constraints can be significant. Maintaining that physician communication, the governance structure, making sure that we know the path forward. But I do think there's a misconception and not a good understanding of, you know, we've got many technology interfaces that would be a downstream from a result. Maybe we're changing our reference lab. Maybe we're doing many things that are going to require change management. So I do think that it can be very time consuming.
Noel, anything to add on that from your perspective?
Well, I think there's a process. If you do it right, there's a process as you're going through the change and the conversion. But if you're also doing things right, there are systems set up. And I think these are very important. If you don't have the ongoing processes in place and communication, as for the previous question, if those aren't continuing on an ongoing basis, you're going to have a breakdown. And it's going to be an operational or communication breakdown. And that is not conducive to long-term relationships. So you need to set up the structures. Again, that's why we harp on the governance structure. And the governance structure is not just a one-time thing. It's an ongoing process.
Right. That's the piece that lives on. It's not just the closing. It's the piece that lives on.
Yes.
I think that makes sense. Well, I think we're close enough to our time, and I think that's probably a good stopping point. But I appreciate all of you joining for this panel, and thank you all for your insights. I am now going to call up my colleague, Emily Johnson, who's going to lead the final installment of the M&A panels.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.